Election managers and workers around the country are reporting widespread threats of violence since the November 2020 election. A survey this spring from the Brennan Center found that, quote, one in three election officials feel unsafe because of their job, and nearly one in five listed threats to their lives as a job-related concern, end quote. Those threats are generally linked with unsubstantiated and often debunked claims of fraud in last year's election. Our next guest talked to election officials around the country about the threats they're facing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you worked as an election official or volunteer in your life? We'd love to hear what your experiences have been like. If you were involved in the November 2020 election, what did you see? Did you encounter hostility or threats, or did you feel support from your community? Do you have questions for our guests about the threats that we're seeing for election workers? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Amy Gardner is a national political reporter for The Washington Post. Amy, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Also with us, Rosalind Helderman, political investigations and enterprise reporter, also at The Washington Post. Rosalind, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And they've both reported on these cases of threats to election officials. Rosalind, let's start with you. You looked into Maricopa County, Arizona. There's actually this review going on of the 2020 ballots, results delayed here. What did you hear from election officials in that county about what they're hearing and what threats they're facing?
Yeah, in Maricopa County, which is where Phoenix is, things have been heated for months now as they have been conducting this recount and audit of the election results that was ordered up by Republicans in the state Senate. There's been an ongoing fight between members of the Republican Party in Arizona, especially between the state legislature and the county board of supervisors, the local officials who are also Republicans. And as a result, largely of that fight, the threats have just kept coming and coming, especially to the folks in Maricopa County. There was a dust up of the fight back in June. And as a result of it, some members of the state legislature called for the local officials to actually be jailed. And as a result of that, they were, for, you know, the nth time, flooded with threats to their county offices, including the threat to kill all the local elected officials and their families, and even a prison jumpsuit that was sent through the mail to the county offices with a promise that that's where they were headed.
And Amy, you've talked to people in Georgia in particular. What kind of things, and again, another hot spot in the elections, what kind of things did you hear there?
Well, it's very similar to what Rosalind is describing. Basically, you know, some of the election officials that I've been dealing with for, you know, the better part of a year have received such a steady stream of threats in the form of phone calls and emails and even letters sent through the post that they have, like, contacts with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. And so they just have this, like, regular system of forwarding the threats on to the law enforcement officials who are keeping track and investigating these. One of the top state election officials in Georgia received a letter in the mail a couple of weeks ago that basically accused him of treason and said that he would not be able to safely walk the streets, nor would his family, if he didn't admit his crimes. So it's really rattling, and I think that's the real takeaway here. I also learned from one election official in Michigan a story of a county clerk who had received threatening phone calls and had set up a little habit, a pattern of when she gets home from work each evening, she checks her closets, because that's how rattled and scared she is, and how scary this is as a trend that's happening everywhere.
The Brennan Center for Justice put out a policy paper last month. You included this in your reporting, looking at this national problem. Along with the report, they put out a short video talking to some election officials, and they gave an example of a phone message left for an official here. Let's give a listen. It includes multiple obscenities, which have been bleeped out here by the Brennan Center.
He will demand the truth, and you will pay for your lying remarks, you liberal lying rhino. We will take you out. Your family, your life, you watched your back.
Can you, Rosalind, that gives a sense of some of the vitriol in the threats people are getting. Is that all that uncommon?
Unfortunately, it's really not. I was talking to an official out in Arizona, in fact, just yesterday, who said that he now gets so many of these threats that he sort of lets them wash over him. But he was talking about how he had just gotten one this past week that was essentially the content was, we are everywhere. We are preparing your food when you go out to eat. We are stocking your groceries when you're at the grocery store. We are everywhere you look, all around you at all times. And he said that one. That one kind of got to him.
We are talking to Rosalind Helderman and Amy Gardner with the Washington Post, looking at threats targeting election officials in states around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234 for your thoughts on what is causing those threats, possible solutions, and if you've worked as an election official yourself, a paid or volunteer. And if you'd just like to share your experience, tell us a little bit about what you do, whether you were on the receiving end of threats or not. Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amy, what did you hear from people about cumulatively what these threats are doing to them and affecting their thoughts on their job?
A couple of different things. First, it's changing the way election officials are doing their job. There's two big national organizations that help election officials in on-the-job learning and continuing education and trends and standards and practices. And one is the National Association of State Election Directors, and the other one is the National Association of Secretary of State. And those organizations happen to have had their summer conferences a couple of weeks ago, early August. And in both cases, the agendas, which are typically really mundane technical stuff, like what's the best design for a ballot, or, recruiting election officials, or, just really basic stuff on how to run elections well and smoothly. Both of those had security of election officials at the top of their agendas. I'm looking at the conference agenda for the National Association of State Election Directors, and their top item was addressing physical threats to elections and election officials. They also had to actually, in one case, one of these conferences was virtual, but the other one was in person, in Iowa, and they actually had to step up security as a precautionary matter for the conference itself, because there were going to be hundreds of election officials at this conference. So they involved the FBI and state law enforcement and local law enforcement at this conference to make sure that they would be safe during the conference itself. But perhaps the most significant sort of fallout of this is what we don't know yet. And that is how this will affect the administration of the midterm elections next year. And of course, there are some off-year elections this year, notably in Virginia and New Jersey. And how will election officials recruit poll workers and election workers in this environment? And how will, what kind of effect will these threats and this general atmosphere of fear and intimidation have on the administration of election? It's a group of people who are claiming that our elections are crooked, and yet the fact of their behavior and their activity has this grave potential to undermine the integrity of our elections by making it difficult for these officials to do their jobs well.
Rosalind, is there a concern that, some people are going to retire and maybe with these threats, this doesn't look like such a hot job that a lot of people are going to step up and want to do? Is there a thought that we're not going to have enough people to run elections if this trend continues?
There's a tremendous concern about that. There was actually a survey this summer from Reed College and the Democracy Fund of election officials, and it found that 60% of election officials in the country's largest jurisdictions were considering retirement. And of course, you have to remember also that elections are run largely, not entirely, but in good measure by volunteers, people from the local community who agree to come out. And it's helpful when they work election cycle after cycle, because elections are complicated, and it's helpful to have people who know the ropes and have done it before. And so there's great concern that the professionals will retire and the volunteer base will dry up, because people will not want to be subjected to this kind of thing anymore.
Amy, I should ask kind of a long-term thing. Elections are always kind of heated. Is there a sense that, yeah, there's always some of this and things have gotten somewhat worse? Or is this a whole different animal this last, 8 months or so?
I would say the latter. I mean, we've seen a level of mistrust infuse the electorate over the last year that we haven't seen before, and that is measurable in terms of the not just the threats that we've written about and that we're talking about now, but also, you know, a lot of these folks won't vote and won't vote by mail or won't vote at all. And that's a direct result of what they perceive to be this erosion of the security and sanctity of elections. So, you know, it's very real. It's a real and immediate and sort of huge impact, because voting by mail, for instance, used to be a type of voting that Republicans did more than Democrats just a couple of years ago. It was a type of voting that Republican officials sort of championed and encouraged among their supporters as a way to get ballots in. And that's reversed over the last year. So that tells you that something kind of seismic has happened. The other point that I think is important to make here is that you have these folks who are so angry and are so sort of intractable and don't want things explained to them, are unwilling to hear what people, the election officials, are trying to tell them about the security of the election. And so there's this polarization, and obviously that's the word that we use all too often to describe our political environment. But the polarization over elections itself is just grown very wide right now because of this.
We're talking to Amy Gardner and Rosalind Helderman from the Washington Post about threats to election workers at state and local levels around the country since the 2020 election. Lots of threats, lots of election workers saying they're feeling threatened. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think this should be handled? Should election officials get more protection? What do you think needs to happen to dial down the temperature and prevent these threats in the first place? Have you worked as an election official yourself? What do you think about what you're hearing about these threats? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk about threats and intimidation of election workers with Amy Gardner, national political reporter at The Washington Post, and Rosalind Helderman, political investigations and enterprise reporter, also with The Post. They co-authored a piece looking into threats that officials have received all around the country since the 2020 election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions, maybe your experiences if you've worked on elections yourself. Let's go to your calls now. Kurt is with us in Chippewa Falls. Kurt, hi.
Yes, hi. Yeah, I hate to sound so vitriolic myself against fellow Americans, but these folks, the FBI, local law enforcement, whatever, need to do whatever is possible to trace them down, track them down, find them, arrest them, charge them with terrorism, and put them through the court system and appropriately sentence them to years in jail.
Kurt, thanks for the call. Rosalind, that takes us to enforcement. What kind of things are we seeing when it comes to investigating these, especially when it comes to direct threats of violence against election officials?
Yeah, the Justice Department actually announced this summer, I believe, a new task force to look specifically at the issue of threats of violence against election staff. They sort of indicated that they want to step up efforts to do exactly what the caller just described, to investigate people who make threats and prosecute those who have broken the law in doing so. It's not easy for the same reason as investigations that involve online chatter. It's often not easy. It often comes anonymously. It often is sort of a vague threat that's hard to act on. It often starts to get into people's First Amendment rights, because you obviously don't have a threat, have a right to threaten violence, but you have a First Amendment right to get awfully nasty. And so it can be a tricky topic area, but the Justice Department has stated very strongly that they believe that threatening election workers is a threat to democracy itself, and they are going to be looking to make more federal cases in these instances.
Thanks a lot for that call, Kurt. We'll go to Joanna now in Eau Claire. Joanna, hi.
Good afternoon. I think that our election workers are doing a phenomenal job. They're mostly volunteers. They're all volunteers. They're doing the best that they can, and they're just great people. They work long hours. I'm so curious as to how these members of the Republican Party can convince seemingly normal people to make the claim that our elections have been fraudulent when they haven't. It's just simply not true. And then they allow themselves to engage in this cult-like behavior. That's my question. But as far as the poll workers are concerned, they're doing a phenomenal job right now.
Joanne, thanks a lot for that call. Amy, to her second point, are we seeing these threats tied into particular claims about alleged fraud in the November elections? I think you mentioned that some of them go with the Sharpie conspiracy that was debunked already in November, I think. Are these dots pretty well connected?
I think that the threats and the misinformation and the anger come from a few different, under a few different categories. Pretty much all have been debunked, or at least no evidence has surfaced to show that these accusations are accurate. And to the caller's point, I think that the genesis of this anger is, first, of course, former President Trump, who, is extremely popular with his base, and that base was extremely upset that he didn't win. And he told them that the election was stolen, and they believed him. And so I think that's sort of the beginning of this, in a way. And then, of course, social media is a place where, inaccurate or unsubstantiated claims circulate all the time, all over the place, under, all different kinds of categories, and the elections are no different. But they've taken root, they've caught fire, whatever metaphor you want to use. And people have latched onto them because Trump was extremely popular. He was a president for whom nearly half of the electorate felt very deeply that he listened to them in a way that others hadn't in recent election cycles and recent presidencies. And so there was a lot of disappointment and despair in that part of the electorate that he lost. And then to be told, well, he didn't really lose, was an easy step for people who didn't want to believe that he'd really lost. And I think that's where this came from. The tricky part is how to try to explain to folks that what they're hearing and being told isn't true. And that's really hard to do. It's hard to tell someone you don't understand how elections are run, but that's what election officials are telling us. They're so frustrated when they try to patiently sit down with people who come in or who email them or who call and say, no, that's not how the Dominion voting systems machines work. No, they're not attached to the internet. No, they haven't been hacked by Venezuelans. No, Biden's votes weren't switched to Trump. That can't happen, and here's why. And it just falls on deaf ears. They do not want to hear it.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Rosalind Helderman and Amy Gardner from The Washington Post about threats against election officials around the country since last November. Back to your calls now with Scott on the line in Madison. Scott, hi.
Hey, how's it going? My question was more like, so are these threats coming from people all over the country? So if you're in Georgia, are you getting a threat from somebody from Alaska, or is it local? Or you know, I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, we tend to think, oh, we're Midwest nice. They aren't going to do that here in Wisconsin. Maybe that's in the South or whatever. But I was just curious if there was any correlation, or whether it's just a smaller group that's angry, that's threatening people everywhere.
Scott, thanks a lot for that call. Roslyn, in the piece, you focused on, I think, Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia. It's got to be tough to trace where the threats are coming from. It could be local. It could be from anywhere, right?
It's true. You know, I hate to say, I grew up in the South, where people also tell themselves they're nice. And, you know, these calls and threats are not nice in the Midwest, in the South, in Arizona, in Georgia. And you're exactly right. It is not the case that the threats in Wisconsin all come from Wisconsin. This world of social media means that, you know, we have seen instances where random anonymous election workers are caught in a snippet of video doing something completely innocuous, but it gets caught up in the pro-Trump media ecosphere with a claim that they are doing something not innocuous. And suddenly a person who is just a worker in Georgia, a worker in Texas, is inundated with threats and nasty comments and emails from all over the country. And so, you know, in the information sphere that we have these days, people can learn about situations anywhere and they can make threats anywhere. And it's not local at all.
Thanks a lot for that call. Amy, I don't want to let the time get away from us without mentioning another big source of stress for anyone involved in elections last year, the pandemic. Apart from these threats, could you talk about how much that changed lives for anyone involved in election planning?
Well, that's one of the great sort of mysteries of how angry some of these folks are at election workers who literally risked their lives to put on an election last year, and whose efforts to make voting easier because of the pandemic were tossed back in their faces as evidence of their attempts to try to sway the election for President Biden. So, you know, you had in Georgia, leading up to the election, one of the main election officials in Fulton County, which is where Atlanta is, died of COVID just weeks before the election. And that office had to deal with that tragedy and also deal with the illness of other people in the office and put on a presidential election and put in all kinds of protocols that they'd never done before, as every institution and business and school and family in America has had to do, but still under great pressure to put on an election while also building plexiglass separators for, you know, for polling locations and having enough hand sanitizer to get around and having the capacity to keep people socially distanced and maybe not in the rain or not in the cold. I mean, all of those things times 1,000 across the country were happening last year. And then when it was over, instead of any kind of gratitude from half of the electorate, these folks got nothing but derision and worse, as we've been talking about.
And Roslyn, in our last little over a minute or so, looking to the future, what kind of efforts are there to make sure that there are enough election officials around the country and that they can do their job safely?
You know, we've talked a little bit about some of the education efforts that are going on through the professional associations around security, some of the stepped up investigations from law enforcement agencies. But I don't know that there is has yet been a sort of comprehensive or cohesive effort to move on from 2020 and start thinking about how this current environment might affect the midterms and the presidential election to come, including the recruiting of new employees and volunteer poll workers. And that's kind of the challenge to come. How do we run elections going forward in this environment?
We'll leave it there. Roslyn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Amy, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Amy Gardner is a national political reporter for The Washington Post, and Rosalind Helderman is a political investigations and enterprise reporter for The Washington Post. We talked to them about their reporting on election officials around the country being intimidated and threatened by people upset with the outcome of the 2020 election.